sign. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On this week's show, we'll have housing, education, and adventure movies on our plate. A Sackville resident is challenging the allowable size of homes in the New Brunswick Tantramar region to make it possible to have more tiny homes built.
This particular amendment was to create opportunities and possibilities for those folks that are interested in small footprint housing that can't find local carpenters since they are so busy to create 20-foot by 20-foot squares, but would rather have a small footprint rectangle built off-site and then brought into our municipality.
The Aurora Adventure Film Festival returns with a new crop of feature films highlighting thrill seekers from around the globe.
Because it's an opportunity to meet people who've done these incredible and crazy things around the globe, how they've done it, and to ask them the questions you want to ask them. How have these people done these things that seem so far out of reach?
Senior Women Living Together, a new not-for-profit organization, matches women seeking housemates to counter solitude and the rising cost of living.
4 years after my husband died, I found myself looking at my finances and my savings. So I knew I was going to be homeless at some point unless I did something.
And the stand-up comics Deadly Aunties provide bursaries to Manitoba and Ontario University students. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Nice to have you with us. We kick things off in Ontario, where the globe-trotting Aurora Adventure Film Festival is back for a second year and continues to grow with even more offerings. The Aurora Adventure Film Festival, held from November 7th to the 10th, will feature films highlighting thrill-seekers from around the globe, along with the speaker series with three well-known adventure travelers. Festival founder Ian Evans says they knew they wanted to bring back the festival after an extremely successful inaugural year. Evans says cultural events in Aurora are always supported by the community. A South Pole explorer himself, Evans says this year will include 20 films in total from far and wide. Arlene Dowell, based in Fergus, Ontario, has that story for us.
A successful film festival in Aurora is back for a second year and continues to grow. The Aurora Adventure Film Festival has returned and will feature films highlighting thrill seekers from around the globe. This year, the Aurora Adventure Film Festival will include the popular two-program schedule at the Gorge Cinema and a speaker series at the Aurora Center for the Arts November 7th through the 10th. Festival founder Ian Evans says they knew they wanted to bring the festival back after an extremely successful inaugural year. Evans says, you know, if you put on a cultural event in Aurora, you will get support.
I realized what a wonderful event it is for a smaller town when it brings communities from outside in and adds to the whole social scene of that community. And I thought about Aurora, I thought about the timing, I thought of the other events we have here, such as the Festival Singers, Riverfest, the cinema, et cetera, and the Arts Center. And what a wonderful fit a film festival in November would be into that social infrastructure.
An adventurer himself, Evan says this year will include 20 films in total, ranging in length from far and wide.
In this festival, there are adventure films from around the world that have been seen in other festivals or are brand new or we've sought out. So none of the films are from my adventures. I'd much rather have it that way. There has been a major documentary film made of my South Pole expedition. It's called Lunatic, suitably. It showed in all the local cinemas, and we toured on the festival circuit with it a few years ago. And that's really where I got this feeling about an adventure film festival for Aurora, when we saw what that did and the fun we had with Lunatic traveling around Europe.
The films were chosen by Evans and his wife, with their goal being to cover off a wide range of adventures and emotions.
We spend many hours looking at films, looking at the programs, and we try to design the program so that it fluctuates and moves. In other words, you've got a really extreme adventure, then you've got something inspirational, then a short film, then a longer film. And so it really ebbs and flows as the program goes on. But we've got programs from, we've got films from people who are 70 or 80 and young kids doing adventures and families and extreme adventurers. So, and we've covered off water sports, we've covered off climbing, cycling, running, kite surfing, from all around the world, these really interesting locations.
Evan says he hopes the films and speaker series inspire people to embark on an adventure of their own. During his many public speaking engagements, you will find Evans concentrating on the message that there is adventure waiting for everyone. Evan says he is just a regular guy.
I feel like I'm an ordinary guy. I've got an ordinary background. I'm a chartered accountant. I've had a career, a regular life, a family, traveled around the world. But on the other side, I've managed to have a secondary life where I can push myself to the edge of what I call my comfort zone and right to the edge of it sometimes and beyond. And I've managed to achieve things. And I always say that everyone can do this. Anyone can cycle across Australia. If you can ride your bike, if you can cook dinner, if you can put your tent up and you can do it again the next day, you can bike across Australia. Yes, you've got to do it 60 times in a row, but you can do it. So break it down and do that. So those are the things that I bring to this and hope to parlay to people that are listening.
With the addition of the speaker series this year, Evan stresses there is room for even more growth.
What we really want this to be is a complete adventure festival weekend. So it's not just for films. This year we've expanded to a speaker series, an adventure speaker series at the Arts Center. And also we've got more screenings, but I want to expand it into maybe a bike ride and a run and things like that. So to really make it a community event that's adventure related.
The cost of the film program is a $20 flat fee.
That gets you into one of the programs. So it's a 2.5 hour program where there's an hour of adventure films, a break for 20 minutes or so. Which is a wonderful part of the event for people to mingle and talk about the films, then another hour of films, and then we break up at the end of that. So that's what you'll get for $20. The speaker series, where adventure speakers are speaking live at the Art Center, they're $12 per event. And I think people are interested in that because it's an opportunity to meet people who've done these incredible and crazy things around the globe, how they've done it, and to ask them the questions you want to ask them. How have these people done these things that seem so far out of reach?
Film programs, speaker series, and ticket information is all available at AlloraAdventureFilmFestival.ca. Arlene Dowell with the Local Journalism Initiative.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
As landlords continue to raise rental prices across the country, many renters are being left behind. According to rentals.ca, the average rent in Canada has increased by 25% since 2021. For some, the result is homelessness, and the Waterloo region is no exception. Pat Dunn, a widowed retiree now living in Peterborough, is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization Senior Women Living Together. Through subscriber-generated profiles, the organization finds matches for senior women who then meet up to discuss living as housemates. The organization is currently promoting their free service in the Waterloo region. Dan Keller, based in Kitchener, Ontario, spoke with Pat Dunn, who talks about her own brush with homelessness and how this led her to help others in the same situation. Here's part of his conversation with Mrs. Dunn.
My name is Pat Dunn. I'm a retired public health nurse, and I am the founder and executive director for Senior Women Living Together. We need to get a sort of critical mass of subscribers in any one area. So we're going around the province, community by community, promoting what we do. So what happens is that once women join our website, they can start to look for compatible homemates, other women that they would like to live with. And then together, they form a homemate group of maybe 2, 3, 4 women. And together, they look for a place to live and that makes it affordable for each of them. And then they each have as much privacy and as much togetherness as they choose to have.
How do the houses that are being found for residents, are they owned by one of the women in the group, or is it a mix of options?
Yeah, it's a mix. We have homeowners that come and join us because they are also having difficulty meeting their financial needs for mortgages or for improvements or upkeep on the house. And also they're tired of living alone and they'd like to have some company. Only about 5% of our members are homeowners. So we have homeowners that come, but most of our members are not. They're currently renting and living alone and looking for, a better option financially and that has social support. And we help the homemade groups find affordable housing by partnering with private landlords. So a private landlord, we'd work with the private landlord to fill their house or their property with senior women who will live together. And then we replace anyone who has to leave the unit. And so that frees the landlord up. The landlord gets excellent tenants. Plus, we manage the relationships in the house. They don't have to worry about that. And we manage the turnover over time.
With an ongoing housing crisis, why focus on senior women?
There's nothing available, there's nothing affordable, and it's not just affecting seniors, it's affecting all age groups. So it's a big mess. It came out of my experience. 4 years after my husband died, I found myself looking at my finances and my savings was just dwindling at a really rapid rate just to give me a roof over my head. So I knew I was going to be homeless at some point unless I did something. So that's how I got started with this. And it sort of was my vision initially, but now we have a board of directors and a nonprofit organization. And so we are hoping to be sustainable for a very long time for other women.
Has the organization been successful in other areas?
Yeah, I mean, we've had 60 women find compatible homemates and start living together. And that was through COVID when many women were not going out to meet anyone in person. And so it's starting to build again. Now that people can start to meet in person, it is very important to meet many times together before you decide to live together. It's a big step to take. So we encourage and help with the arranging of meetups and that sort of thing so the women can start to get to know one another.
So beyond the needs for shelter, it's also building up community and relationships.
Yes, exactly. What we found, I mean, my initial fear, of course, was homelessness was financially related. But as I got talking with other senior women in the same situation, I realized it wasn't going to be a really safe way to go into my aging process living alone. And I was acknowledged finally to myself that I was lonely. I don't need a lot of social support around me, but it's great to have it. And if it's right there at your fingertips, then if I fall, somebody's going to be there. They're going to help me and get me to the next stage and so on. And it just takes away all the fears around aging.
What does success look like for your organization in Waterloo Region?
Well, we're hoping that through our 3-month sort of launching us out into the region, a 3-month program that we were instituting, and we hope to get, lots more subscribers, hopefully enough that it meets that kind of critical mass in that area so that homemade groups start forming. Because you need to talk with, 4 or 5, sometimes 10 women before you find one woman that you want to live with. And so it's fairly complex and it does take 3 to 6 months for homemade groups to form. We can't help women in urgent need of housing. That the agencies, they have to go to the agencies for that.
And is there any cost to the folks taking part in the program?
No, it's completely free. We're a nonprofit corporation. We're not in this for the money. Although we do have expenses, it's not cheap to run a good website, especially one with kind of functionality that we have. We have donation drives and we invite anyone and everyone to donate. We also seek grants. money and have received some grants from the Canadian Women's Foundation and the New Horizons for Seniors program. And so we can continue to look for grant money and donations.
That was an interview with Pat Dunn, the founder and executive director of the not-for-profit organization Senior Women Living Together.
Do you have questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
A Sackville resident is asking the New Brunswick Tantramar Council to change the way it regulates the size of dwellings. She hopes to make small homes or tiny homes more practical. Sackville dwellings must, as of now, have minimum dimensions of 20 feet by 20 feet, which is too wide for buildings to be constructed off-site and transported on provincial highways to their final destination. So Natalie Donaher is proposing to allow for rectangular-shaped small homes to be built elsewhere and moved to Sackville. Donaher believes that her proposal could be part of a municipal plan review, which could be achieved by 2026, but the affordable housing advocate decided to apply for this change immediately. I didn't think we should wait that long, she says, because it seems the housing crisis is much more urgent than that, adds Donaher, who spoke with Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Tiny homes are growing in popularity as a solution to the high cost of building and housing. But in Sackville, land use bylaws limit how small an individual dwelling can be, and they even limit the shape. Currently, dwellings in Sackville must have a minimum footprint of 20 feet by 20 feet. That square shape creates practical challenges for building units off-site and then transporting them to their final location. And it's something Tantramar Council will have a chance to change, thanks to Sackville resident Natalie Donaher. At their Committee of the Whole meeting on Monday, Tantramar Council heard Plan 360 planner Jenna Stewart present Donaher's proposed change. Remove the 20-foot by 20-foot minimum in Sackville's bylaw and replace it with a 400-square-foot limit. Stewart explained that the square shape requirement was likely an aesthetic choice to prohibit homes that looked like mobile homes, which are otherwise defined in the bylaw.
So normally when we see these text amendments go through, there's an interested developer who has a project in mind, and it's all part of a business plan.
Right.
But this is something different. Tell me how this has come about.
I don't have a particular business plan, but I am interested in smaller footprint housing. I've been working with some nonprofits in the last year and a half. And this particular amendment was to create opportunities and possibilities for those folks that are interested in small footprint housing that can't find local carpenters since they are so busy to create 20-foot by 20-foot squares, but would rather have a small footprint rectangle built off-site and then brought into our municipality. And as it stands, 20 feet by 20 feet would prohibit anything from being brought on the roads. So we have some very skilled builders in the local vicinity, maybe 100 kilometers nearby or closer, and they cannot be hired by any of our municipality citizens to build housing on lands or lots that they buy in town with this particular restriction. So this was to allow, hopefully, folks to find builders sooner. And I'm sure this sort of idea would have been considered with the bylaw changes that are impending, but I didn't think we should wait that long because it seems the housing crisis is much more urgent than that, and so that's why I brought the application forward.
Yeah. Because otherwise we'd be waiting for a review of our whole municipal plan, so it could be years long, basically.
Yes, they are anticipating a review to be done by 2025-2026, but the housing crisis is only ever increasing, and I've been speaking to and listening to stories in the last 2-3 months of instances of individuals who are having a difficult time finding housing here that would like to move to our community and can't find apartments, especially those with animals or potentially small budgets for whatever reason. So this might fill that need, and I am hopeful that it goes through on second reading.
There is application fees involved with this sort of text amendment, which is why usually you see it coming from developers who have a business interest. So Did you fundraise for this, or how are you making that work?
The timeline was quite short for the turnaround to make it to today's meeting, so I paid out of pocket, and I am in talks with community groups who are interested in fundraising for this fee, but at the moment I just paid it.
How much is it?
It's $1,500.
I gather, you know, going from 2020 to 400, and 400 you've chosen because that's the area limit now. There are tiny homes that are smaller than 400 square feet. So are you concerned that, you know, we'll make this text amendment, but there's still a limit baked into it?
There is, but because the 2025-2026 review is coming up, I think we'll have a longer timeline to consider the aspects of changing those 400 square feet to something even smaller, which might align with our town's priorities and which may not. But that's right, the 12 neighbors community that was stated during the council meeting is much smaller footprint than what we are introducing, or what I would hope to introduce for the text amendment. So it is an excellent transitional community example, but it is not what today's amendment was aimed to reproduce here. We are just essentially changing the dimensions of housing instead of the square footage. And 400 square feet is a cottage-sized building. They often call them that instead of a tiny house, since I think 400 square feet for the enthusiasts of tiny houses, they would say that's not tiny anymore. So we're just doing cottage-sized spots. Yeah.
This is a mansion by tiny home standards.
400 square feet, 450 square feet would be a mansion by tiny house standards. And they are often 400 square feet, 450 square feet is often used by multiple levels of government to assess livable sizes for housing grants. So that's why I had it in my head to just change basically where it may be built. So the restriction of having it built on site rather than off site, and then the road dimensions, you know, we're logistically hemmed in to rectangles of a certain size if we intend to apply for any of the federal or hopefully provincial grants that may be available for housing, and then having it built by someone off-site who may be available to do so with a quick turnaround, and then have them brought to somewhere within the community.
That's Sackville resident Natalie Donaher, who has taken a step towards making Sackville's land use bylaws more friendly to small home development.
Okay, Bennett, go on. Okay.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Sherry McKay and Stephanie Pangowish, both members of the Deadly Aunties comedy group, have teamed up to create a $2,000 bursary to be split between two university students. They drew inspiration to create the bursary from their desire to give back to their communities and from their shared experiences as mothers while moving through post-secondary education. The bursary is available to any Indigenous post-secondary student who lives in Manitoba or Ontario. Applicants will, however, have to share how humor has helped them during their healing journey. McKay and Pangowish will choose the bursary recipients on November 8 and hope to create more of them. Capanese Thibault in Winnipeg, Manitoba, met up with the comic duo.
Sherry and Stephanie created a bursary available to university students. They drew inspiration to create the bursary from wanting to give back to their communities and their shared experiences of being mothers while going through post-secondary schooling.
So Sherry and I have always, ever since, you know, the Deadly Aunties started, we've always been wanting to give back to community. What we did before is when we put on shows, we would look for local Indigenous programming that's not technically funded by government or doesn't have too many supports, financial supports. So what we did is we started doing fundraisers at our shows and just gave all the money to like Indigenous youth programming. And there was some over here that we donated to. There was some in Ontario that we donated to. And we just always wanted to give back to community.
The bursary kind of came from, you know, Stephanie and I, we were both post-secondary students and moms, and we know the struggle. And man, you know, sometimes you have to pick between like rent and food or power and water and stuff like that. So we just wanted to kind of create something, just a little something that could help alleviate those things for some of the post-secondary students out there. And we're not backed by any government funding or anything like that. Like, this is coming out of Deadly Auntie's pockets. Not that it means any less if it was, because, you know, we have to find a way to help each other and help ourselves. And but I just mean, like, that this is coming from us, and if we have a way in the future to tap into other resources so that we could have bigger bursaries would be, you know, awesome, or so that we could have more, because right now where, you know, the bursary is just offered, it's two bursaries, $1,000 each.
Mm-hmm.
So one person in Ontario, that's where Stephanie represents, and then me in Manitoba. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, I wish we had this in Alberta or Saskatchewan. And
we're like, no. It's hard to even offer this just to Ontario and Manitoba because we get a lot of applicants.
The bursary and the eligibility requirements can be found on the Deadly Auntie's website with more information included.
Check out our website.
Yeah, that's where the bursary is and all of the other information, eh?
Yeah.
www.thedeadlyaunties.com.
November 8th is the deadline.
Yeah, November 8th is the deadline.
So eligibility is, you must be a post-secondary student, Indigenous post-secondary student. So we're going to ask for qualifications on that. You must attend and reside in Manitoba or Ontario. And you must, you know, share with us how humor has helped you on your healing journey.
With Stephanie and Sherry being pioneers in the industry as Indigenous women, it hasn't always been easy for them, given comedy is a very male-predominated industry. Here are some words and wisdom that they have to share for beginner comedians.
We need more Native female comedians out there. And Stephanie, I don't want to speak for Stephanie, but my DMs are always open when people have questions, and I always try my hardest to answer them and help people. If it's like, you know, I want to go to an open mic, would you come with me, you know, or like, would you support me? And I'll do my best. And Stephanie has actually been there for me during the beginning of my process because she's got more experience than me. So
I think be yourself. Also, you know, trust your instincts. Trust your instincts when you're around people. That energy doesn't lie. Because as soon as you pick up on those vibes, just get out of there. Because, you know, in the end, you either learn from that way or learn the hard way, you know, and I've had to learn the hard way myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up working with people that, you know, acted like my brothers and sisters, but then turned around and they weren't. So now I understand what they mean about trusting your instincts. Like, that's kind of like a message from, you know, maybe the spirit world. I don't know. Maybe creator. I have really no clue. But understand, you know, and trust the process. Trust the process. Be yourself. Find your authentic voice, because that's what people want to hear. People want to relate to your most authentic self. Don't try to imitate other people. Like, let your walls down. Enjoy the moment, because like, it's all love in the end. You know, people come there to see you. And so when you're up there, your most authentic self, you know, telling your stories that relate to you, just like, enjoy those moments.
Don't forget your purpose, and don't forget why you want to get into that, and all of the cool things that you can do, and all of the cool people you can meet and help along the way.
That's it for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to our reporters, Erica Butler, Capenaise Thibault, Dan Keller, and Arlene Dowell. National editors, Victoria Fenner, and the newest addition to our team, and national editor, Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.
Radio@frequencynews.ca.